I think that a lot of people do know some Aboriginal people that just don't realise it.
You look at my mum, she's English. You look at my dad, he's Aboriginal. And look at me, I'm a bit in between. I haven't got the flat nose anymore. I sometimes wish I did.
You know, just because I'm Aboriginal doesn't mean I have a flag tattooed to my forehead.
Like, most of them call me Auntie Lynn, and I'm happy to be their auntie, even though that I'm not.
Because I am Aboriginal because of my DNA, not because of my lingo.
Meet the Mob, a podcast from 1233 ABC Newcastle with Jill Emberson. Subscribe at abc.net.au/Newcastle.
I'm out on the grounds of Hunter TAFE with Joe Newman this morning for Meet the Mob. He's finished his classes for his Diploma of Community Services. Why are you doing that, Joe?
Most of my life I've been a taker. Like, I've just taken from the community, and this is my chance to give back and help blokes that have struggled, you know, with that lifestyle that I've grown up with.
From what I understand of your lifestyle, Joe, it's been one that's been pretty tough. What was life like for you growing up as a young boy?
That's what I thought life was about. I thought you had to be tough to survive, and I thought you had to be, you know, the man, the one that was better than the next bloke, not being the biggest bloke. It all did was got me in a lot of trouble, and I guess it was all that built up anger inside just coming out, you know, and frustration, not knowing who I was.
So were you getting into fights at a young age?
Always. That's how I thought I had to earn my keep, or, you know, maintain my reputation, was to take on the biggest bloke.
Did you usually win?
From the Kiri side, you know, the Aboriginal side, is I was just gifted, and it was very rarely that I lost.
Well, as I look at you today, you are pretty muscular and pretty strong. Have you always been that fit, that bulky?
Always had that physique, you know. Always been active, always on the go, and adrenaline junkie.
Where does the Aboriginal side fit into your life, Joe?
Coming into my teens when I started identifying that you know, I had an Aboriginal background, or Murray TI. Thursday Islander, my dad is. Mum's Aussie.
And your dad's from up in the Torres Strait. Yeah. Have you ever been up there?
No, I haven't had a chance yet, no. Within the next 5 years, that's my plan, to get up there and meet some family.
Have any of your brothers and sisters managed to connect up with that side of your family so far away in Australia?
Yeah, well, my brother's had the opportunities a few times, you know, to go up to Townsville and meet all the rallies up there. He's been across to Thursday Island, done the tradition, you know, like where they catch the sea turtle and they stew it up and... Yeah, and have the big feast going on. And
what did he say about it?
Oh, he loved it. They give him the shell to bring back.
Is it odd to have a father who comes from such a different part of Australia that you don't even know about?
It's been hard to identify, because the way from coming from the Lost Generation and the way it's impacted on his life, that's impacts on the way he delivers, you know, fatherhood to us.
What happened to your dad?
Just that stolen generation where he was adopted, and I don't know the full extent of it, because we've never really sat down and gone right into it. But from what Mum's told me, you know, he was adopted and he came across the mainland when he was 13 or 14. He was lucky to get off one of the trawlers. He jumped off at Brisbane, I think, and the trawler sunk the next run out. And, you know, which was a bit of a call, because everyone on that boat died.
What were they trawling for?
Oh, the fishermen. Like, it was either go to school or get a job, you know, and the trawler was the big employment on the island, yeah.
So he ends up in Brisbane on his own as 13 and 14 years of age. Do you know what happened to him then?
No, not really. I know he had a bit of one of those run amok, you know, teen years and into his 20s. Again, another one that he only pulled his head in when he hit his 30s. You know, you hear very often blokes that live that lifestyle, you know. Basically, from the time he was turned 30, he went and got into rigging, did tickets and that, and got right into it. And he was always a loner, I guess. He would travel from town to town. He was always alone. You'd see him once a year. He'd come down and just spend lots of money on us, you know. Takes to all the amusement parks and the rest of it, you know. Just hand us $50 notes, like they were bits of paper. And
did you want something other than that from your dad, Joe?
Yeah, well, that was good. To be able to, you know, have that money in your hand, be able to spend it on whatever you wanted, but still today I get a little bit emotional over it, and how he wasn't there. But what do you do? Try and make up lost time now, I suppose. That's it. That's all I can do.
Well, you're now in your 30s, in your mid-30s, so your chance to make your sort of run at life after a pretty tough time in which you've spent quite a deal of time addicted to drugs and in jail. Tell me about your addiction.
Well, I guess it all started off just dabbling, you know, the boys hanging around them crowds where a lot of alcohol would start with and pot and, you know, a lot of trips. We went through phases like that where from alcohol to, you know, LSD and pot and crime, stealing cars and going further and breaking enters, and got worse and worse over the years, you know. I'd have periods of times where I'd have 1 or 2 years here and there where I'd stay away from the speed. That was my choice of drug, the speed. And I couldn't drop it at all, you know. I'd be constantly drunk or smoking pot, you know, 24/7. That was the main one, the speed and the crime. It went hand in hand.
Addicted to speed and addicted to crime?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Most of the time I didn't need the speed. Even if I was hanging out, I could very easily go and do what I had to do to get my next fix, you know. I went to rehab a couple times, I should say, but I still held on to that criminal side where that was my fix, you know, going out and robbing somewhere, you know, a factory or, you know, a club or whatever, you know, and just having that little bit of money there. But it wasn't the money wasn't really the addiction. It was the adrenaline rush of just nearly being caught, you know.
Did you ever get caught?
I never got caught red-handed, so to speak. But I always got done with a little bit of evidence here and there, or I'd get sloppy somewhere along the line, you know.
I want to find out about the time you've served in jail, but I'm a little bit curious to find out how you learn to be a good thief.
Oh, I guess you just learn by mistake. If you set an alarm off here, you know, you've got to learn to manoeuvre around that, you know, not set off sensors, and you learn to crawl around, find what you need to find.
Do you meet many crims along the way?
Oh, yeah. That's the big thing about jail, you know. I don't see it as a real positive thing, because, you know, if you love that lifestyle, you're only going to get more knowledge of how to do bigger and better things, you know. Well, not really better, but, you know, bigger.
You're going to learn that on the inside?
Yeah, you do. Easy, just from small talk. You make friends and you catch up when you're out of jail, and, you know, then you run along together, and either that or, you know, you put each other onto stuff.
Do you ever get to a point where you scared yourself, that you thought you were going too far in your criminal behaviour?
That was all part of the addiction, you know. You love that fear, you know, being on edge. You push your limits to the point where, you know, a security guard could reach out and grab you, but you'd be laughing and running off, and I'm busting through a door while he's busting in it, you know, stupid stuff like that. And it was that fear, it was all full of fear. It sort of had this joy about it, I suppose. It's just really weird how it works. It's hard to let go of.
Joe Newman with me in Meet the Mob on 1233 ABC Newcastle. You've left some of that behind. How long since you've committed a crime, Joe?
It's been a while. It's been a little while.
How does that feel? Do you miss it?
Oh, yeah. As sad as it sounds, yeah, I do. You know, it's hard. It's one of those addictions that you're constantly battling, you know.
Is it the same with drugs? Do you miss drugs as well?
Yeah, well, it's hand in hand. You get the same, I suppose, it's all the same receptors and that you're fighting. You know, you're trying to fill this hole with an adrenaline rush, and the drug, it's the same thing. You fill this hole with something, with a shot or a smoke or, you know.
Robbing a shop.
Yeah.
And you were doing all of this here around the Hunter?
Yeah. And the police didn't like me very much for...
Managed to be straight enough for a while to get at least your Cert 4 in community services, and now you're on your way to completing your diploma of community services. That's a really terrific thing. But I must say, I've heard of a lot of ex-users wanting to change the world and do community services and never getting to the end. Will you?
I will. You know, I can very easily just stand still for a couple of weeks and go, I've had enough, you know, I'm doing my head in, I don't want to do no more, but I'll pick it back up. But it's been a struggle. I never really studied at school, and going straight in out of addiction, straight into 2 years of study, it's been getting that brain working again.
Do you think you've fried a few of your brain cells?
Oh, big time, yep. And my short-term memory is pretty shocking. You know, I can sit down and do an assessment and I cannot remember Jack, you know. But if someone else, a classmate or a friend, was to ask me something that related to, you know, the community sector, I can just, it'll just flow out. So sitting down and trying to bash my head to do that stuff myself, It's just, yeah, I struggle with that.
But you're 35 years old, and if you don't get qualified, you know where you're going, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
What does keep you going?
I've got two teenage boys, you know, and I don't want to see go down the same path that I do. So I've got to lead by example, you know, and I've got a little girl on the way. 3 months, I'll be a daddy again. And, yeah, I've got to pull my head in and just keep this stuff going, keep it rolling.
When you were in jail, were there lots of other Aboriginal people there?
Yeah, there's always, yeah, everywhere you went. Always meeting brothers.
What's that like?
I don't know, it was sort of hard for me because, you know, I identify as an Aboriginal, but I've never really had a big social life around Aboriginal blokes, you know, so it's all that standoffish, a little bit standoffish because I don't know how to approach brothers, you know. We get on the same level and it's all good, you know, we're just, you know, like two mates, but it's that approach, you know, because I'm fair-skinned Aboriginal, you know. And I know a lot of Aboriginal blokes, they straight away, hey, brother, you know, or cuz, you know, and they recognise that I'm Indigenous, you know, and that's weird.
Have you experienced much racism in your life?
Not a great deal, no. I've heard it thrown around all my life, but not direct at me. My brother, he used to cop it a lot, you know, because he's straight away, you know, I'm Aboriginal, this is my land, he'd say stuff like that, you know, and the police in particular would go, you black piece of shit, you know, blah, blah, and they'd put him on his back foot and they'd basically attack him, you know. They'd stand shoulder to shoulder and attack him. And they used to shit me off because I could come in, I could, you know, I'd not have a problem standing, getting in their face and pushing them back, where he'd be flabbergasted, you know. He didn't know what to say, he didn't know how to come back. He wanted to kill him, but he knew he couldn't, you know.
This is your brother here in the Hunter?
He was, yeah. There's a lot more. He copped a lot more than what I witnessed, you know.
Why do you think that is?
Just because straight away identifying as Aboriginal. He'd say, this is my land, blah, blah, blah. He can't tell me what to do. Blah. And he stood his ground, you know, to the point where all they could do was insult him, you know, racial comments. And they were good at it.
Having spent as much time inside and addicted as long as you have, Joe Newman, you're looking down the barrel now of getting some qualifications and being a good role model for your sons, your forthcoming daughter. What would you like to be doing 5 years from here?
It was only 6 months ago. My five-year goal was to go north, up to Cairns, Townsville Way, to do some sort of outreach or, you know, even rural work, you know, in Indigenous communities. And get to know my family, you know, get a chance to meet my family.
Is that still your goal?
Yeah, I want to go, yeah, definitely. That's where I'm going. A lot of stuff to put in place in between now and then, but, yeah, I want it to happen.
You've been listening to a 1233 ABC Newcastle podcast. For more, visit our website at abc.net.au/Newcastle.